Where did you put your keys? What was the name of that guy you met at last week's meeting? These are the little details we wish our brains could keep track of, but they often fail to do so. So check out these key insights from Why We Forget and How to Remember Better, The Science Behind Memory by Andrew Budson and Elizabeth Kenzinger. Andrew is a medical doctor and a professor of neurology at Boston University. Elizabeth is a professor and the chairperson of the Department of Psychology and Neuroscience at Boston College. They've teamed up to present the latest science on memory and offer practical tips you can use to remember practically anything.
Hi, I'm Andrew Budson, Chief of Cognitive and Behavioral Neurology at the Veterans Affairs Boston Healthcare System and Professor of Neurology at Boston University.
I am Elizabeth Kenzinger, Professor and Chair of the Department of Psychology and Neuroscience at Boston College.
And we are the authors of Why We Forget and How to Remember Better, The Science Behind Memory. And we are going to share with you five of the key insights from our book. The first insight is that memory is not one thing. So let me explain this. In the clinic last week, I saw one of my patients who has Alzheimer's disease. Now, she's the grandmother of three children and five grandchildren, and she's been living with the disease for a number of years. At the appointment, her daughter asked me a couple of very good questions. How can she still play piano and play it well when she can't remember her own grandchildren? And how come she still remembers all the recipes she used to cook when she was growing up, when today she can't even remember whether we went to the grocery store an hour later? So the answer is that memory is not one thing, and Alzheimer's tends to affect some types of memory more than others. Episodic memory is your memory for events or episodes of your life. It's the type of memory that you use to travel back in time and re-experience a prior event, such as the birth of a child or a trip to the grocery store. To play piano, ride a bike, or tie your shoes, you use your procedural memory, your memory for skills and habits. And to remember recipes, what color a lion is, or what a fork is used for, as well as other facts and information, you use your semantic memory. Now, the brain networks used to learn and retrieve each of these types of memories are different. And Alzheimer's disease generally impairs episodic memory first, then semantic memory second, and only much later does it affect procedural memory. That's why the grandmother I'm caring for couldn't remember her trip to the grocery store or even her grandchildren, but she can still recall her old recipes and still play the piano.
The second insight we'd like to share with you is that memory is a cycle. Memory requires three phases to occur. First, we have to get the content from an experience into a format that our brain can store. We call this the process of encoding. Second, the brain actually has to store or consolidate that information so that it's accessible over longer periods of time. Third, we need to retrieve that content in the moment that it's needed so we can bring our colleague's name to mind as they approach. But we call memory a cycle because that act of retrieving the memory actually restarts that process again. We can encode new details. Maybe we update our memory of our colleague to note that they now wear glasses. And we must restore the memory in order for us to be able to access it later. So we are constantly going through that process of encoding and storing and retrieving. Forgetting and memory distortions can arise at any of those stages. We can fail to encode a person's name, or we might encode it incorrectly as a similar sounding name. Or we might encode the correct name and briefly have access to it, but we fail to store it adequately. And so later, we've either forgotten the name entirely by the time we next see the person, or we've begun to call them by an incorrect name. We might also simply fail to retrieve the name in the moments it's needed. leading to those frustrating experiences where we recall someone's name only after they're no longer in our vicinity.
The third insight we'd like to share with you is that forgetting is normal and can even be helpful. So do you wish you could simply take a pill and have the superpower to remember everything? Well, given how much marketing there is for such so-called memory-enhancing vitamins, herbs, and supplements, you might think that if such a pill really existed, you should jump at the chance to take it. But would it really be helpful to remember everything? In fact, why is remembering the past useful at all? Well, the answer is that your memory for the past is useful because it allows you to imagine the future and plan accordingly. So, for example, remembering that it rained last week isn't of much use unless, when you step outside today and you see those dark clouds in the sky, it reminds you of that rainy day last week. And thus you imagine that it might rain again today, and so you should grab your umbrella. Okay. So now you understand why memory for the past is useful, because it helps you imagine and plan for the future. So wouldn't it be helpful to remember everything from your past? Absolutely not. Imagine if your friend asked you where you'd like to go for lunch. Would it be helpful for you to retrieve and re-experience every meal out you've ever had? No, you depend upon your memory to forget all those experiences that were quite mediocre, and only remember the ones that were quite good so you could suggest going to one of them. And of course, you also want to remember those restaurant experiences that were quite awful so you can make sure to avoid them in the future. So we really depend on our memory to prioritize both what we remember and what we forget.
The fourth insight we'd like to share with you is that there are strategies you can use to avoid forgetting. During encoding, there are four things that you can focus on doing. F-O-U-R. The F means that you should focus your attention on what you want to remember. Don't multitask. The O means that you should organize the information. For example, if you're a student studying for an exam, don't try to memorize your notes until they're organized in a logical way. And if you're needing to memorize your shopping list, organize it by category or in some other way that makes sense to you. Our brain holds onto chunks of organized content, and so the better organized the information, the more we can fit into a chunk, and thus the more information we can retain. This is why experts can remember so much in their specific domain of expertise. They've learned how to organize the information. U means to understand the information. Confirm you've heard the person's name correctly. Make sure your boss's request for your next meeting makes sense to you, and only then try committing them to memory. The R means to relate the information to something you already know. Does the person's name overlap with one of your favorite authors? Make a mental note of that association. Doing those four things will help you to both encode the information for the short term and also to get that information stored for longer term access. When it comes time to retrieve that information, the fact is we often thwart our own retrieval attempts. First, we get so anxious we cannot think of the information that's stored in our memory. It's important to try to relax. Deep breaths might be enough, or in some cases, you might want to reframe your goal. Don't worry if you can't think of your colleague's name. Just reframe your goal as engaging an interesting conversation. Second, we often think it will help if we generate possibilities for the information we're searching for. We might think of possibilities for the person's name or think of information that might be related to the exam question. But because of the way the brain works, when we retrieve one piece of information, we actually make it less likely that we'll retrieve related pieces of information. Instead, try to return mentally to the context in which you experience the information. One of the last times you saw your colleague, or one of the last times you were studying that content for an exam. Memory retrieval works when the brain is able to return to a state similar to the one that it was in at the time of encoding. And bringing to mind that prior context can be one way to help the brain do just that, allowing you to access the content you need when you need it.
The last insight we'd like to share with you is that there are lifestyle changes that you can make to improve your memory and brain health. The most important lifestyle change is to engage in aerobic exercise. Aerobic exercise releases growth factors in the brain that actually helps you to grow new brain cells. Now, studies have shown that this effect of exercise is so large that you can actually see expansion in the parts of the brain critical for memory in as little as 6 months. And the increase in exercise correlates with the increase in brain volume, which in turn correlates with the improvement in memory. Now, also important is getting enough sleep. So to start, if we don't get enough sleep at night, then we're going to be tired the next day. And if we're tired, it's going to be difficult to focus our attention, which is critical, as you've just heard from Elizabeth. Now, it turns out that in order to hold on to the information that we've learned during the day so we can retrieve it days, weeks, or years later, we need to consolidate that memory during sleep. So if you don't get a good night's sleep, you're going to have difficulty holding on to your memories for a lifetime. And that's also why if you crammed for that test over a couple of days instead of studying during the whole semester, that material tends to vanish in a couple of weeks. Now, eating a healthy menu of foods is also critical. In a nutshell, this means eating the Mediterranean menu of foods, including fish, olive oils, avocados, fruits and vegetables, nuts and beans, whole grains, and from a similar diet called the MIND diet, we can also add poultry, chicken, and turkey. Now, those foods are all good, but there are some things that we've learned are not so good for you. And those are the highly processed foods that includes most snack foods, cereals, and even white flour, white bread, and white rice. All of those can cause a spike of insulin when you eat those, and that's not good for your brain. So try to eat those foods only once in a while. And it's also important to maintain a healthy body weight. Lastly, there's evidence that staying cognitively active by learning new things, staying socially active by spending time with friends and family, and keeping a positive mental attitude are all important. Now, why would a positive attitude be important? Well, we think it's because people who have a positive attitude are more likely to take care of themselves, eat right, and exercise, and people with a positive attitude are more likely to be social and outgoing. Now, what about those computerized brain training games that they always advertise on TV and radio? Do those actually help? So it turns out it's been studied, and people who spend time working on computerized brain training games, they get better at those computerized brain training games. It just doesn't translate to overall brain health. But the things that do are aerobic exercise, eating a healthy menu of foods, staying cognitively active, socially active, and having a positive mental attitude.
Thank you, Andrew and Elizabeth. That was 5 big ideas from Why We Forget and How to Remember Better, The Science Behind Memory by Andrew Budson and Elizabeth Kenzinger. For more on the topic, check out our book bite for Remember, The Science of Memory and the Art of Forgetting by Lisa Genova. I'm Rufus Griscom. Have a memorable day.